And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, David, as we promised, we have to talk about the election results. We had the election in Pennsylvania this week. Not very many people voted, fewer than 25% of the potential voters actually bothered to vote. And there were a lot of interesting things on the ballot. For example, there was an amendment to the state constitution. A question was whether an explicit bar against discrimination because of race or ethnic origin or religion should be added to the Constitution. Nobody campaigned against this. Everybody who was involved with making recommendations about ballot questions supported this. But fully a quarter of the population who voted, 500,000, voted against it. Voted not to add a prohibition against discrimination to the state constitution. And about the same number voted against letting fire departments who employ firemen to have access to state funds, to borrow money, not grants, borrow money. Why? Because those fire departments with employees are in cities. And you know what element lives in cities. So you had a very peculiar low vote and a very interesting right-wing turnout in the vote. And the two recommendations, the two amendments to the Constitution to curb the power of the governor in an emergency passed.
Well,
doesn't seem like either the liberals or the Democrats did especially well in this election.
Well, let's break that down. First of all, as far as the 25% nay vote, I mean, you're going to get probably close to that against anything. All right. There's a certain element of people who said, I don't want the government doing this, the government doing that. Also,
you may have a 500,000 people in the state who say that, but they shouldn't be a quarter of the vote.
Well,
they should be, all right, 10% of the vote.
Well,
because most people don't think that way. Most people are not in favor of discriminating against others.
Yeah, but also remember what this was. This was, in some ways, a very redundant proposition to put in there because there's already strong state laws, civil rights laws in Pennsylvania against this, and you have federal laws against discrimination. So that putting this in the Constitution doesn't add an awful lot. It makes a statement, but it doesn't add an awful lot to law or to things. However,
but that doesn't justify voting against it.
I know that, but it was used as a vehicle to get those first two ballot propositions that limited the power of the governor passed, because repeatedly, and I don't know about you, but I was getting flyers saying vote yes on everything.
Oh, I got plenty of flyers in the mail. Four colors, heavy stock, constantly.
Yeah, and none of them said to vote no on anything. The governor did not put together any kind of a team to defend his position and his powers. And there was a pretty big drop-off there. The constitutional amendment on the civil rights won by, I think, over 70%, and the anti-governor propositions had, the top number I saw was 56. It was either 53 or 56%. So there was a substantial drop-off there.
Well, but no, still, I think so far, I mean, the voting is still going on, but I think it's at this point 52 and change against 47 and change.
Yeah. So, you know, if they put any effort in, they could have defeated this.
They could have. That's right. They should have.
They should have, but they didn't.
Why? Why didn't they pay attention to this? You know these guys. These are your buddies. What are they thinking?
You know, it's strange. Democrats have a history of not paying attention to things they should have paid attention to. They should have paid attention to the 2010 election because of the reapportionment in the census, and they didn't pay attention to that. They got caught. There have been plenty of things that they just haven't paid attention to. One of the things they have paid attention to over the last number of years, and basically because the trial lawyers have done a lot, is the court, the appellate court races. And they've turned Pennsylvania's appellate court into a, it's now 6-1 Democratic. At one time, it was a majority Republican. And so that's something, when they put their mind to it, they can do it. You just don't know. And as far as other, one of the things is there weren't a lot of sexy races out there, but there was a district attorney's race in Philadelphia. Was not a mayoral primary, but a district attorney's race that should have brought people out. And that was the liberals versus the police union. And the sitting U.S. attorney, I'm sorry, district attorney, Larry Krasner, who had been elected partly on George Soros's money and strategy, he fended off a pretty vigorous challenge by a former assistant DA who he had fired, and someone who had been endorsed by former Pennsylvania DA, Philadelphia DA, Pennsylvania governor, and Democratic National Committee chairman Ed Randell, who came out against him.
He won better than 2-1, right?
Yeah, he won better 2-1, and that he won was not so much a surprise. I think the margin was somewhat of a surprise. We'll see what that has. Now, on the other end of the state, you had Pittsburgh. You had a mayor's race in Pittsburgh, and the sitting mayor was defeated in Pittsburgh by an African American. It'll be the first African American. So we tend to have, we're having this Democrats consolidating in the two big cities in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, and more liberals. And then the rest of the state still being fairly conservative outside of, you know, the middle, what they call Alabama.
So now, what about Scranton? What about Marty Flynn? His race? Now, that was something we were following.
Yeah, that was something because the Republicans also tried to make that a referendum on the governor. And they kept linking Marty Flynn to the governor and saying that he kept backing the governor and it cost us jobs and it cost us openings. And they put a lot of effort into that. But the thing was, the effort was handled from Harrisburg. Chris Chermak, the county commissioner, the Republican who was voting against, who was running against Marty Flynn, outsourced his campaign to the Republican state committee. They recruited him because he had nothing to lose. He didn't have to give up his seat. And they organized this, and weekly I was getting flyers on that. And they were all from the Republican state committee. And, you know, there was a question as to whether or not it would be effective, and it wasn't. Marty Flynn won handily on that race. He got 51-52%. Chermak got 37%. The only reason Flynn's vote wasn't higher was there was a Green Party candidate in that, and she got the endorsement of Scranton Times and got 9%. She would have caucused with the Democrats. So if you add her and Flynn, you had over 60% of the vote. But it was kind of surprising. And Flynn, they got desperate at the end. They try to say Flynn was for defunding the police, you know, one of these nonsense ads. And Flynn had a rapid response. I didn't see it, but I heard about it, which he said, what are they talking about? I was a corrections officer. I took care of people in jail, you know, kept people in jail. And it didn't go very far on that.
How about Pat O'Malley, the Democrat turned Republican, turned Democrat, turned independent?
Yeah, he, the former county commissioner, and he had organized put a lot of money into a race for the Register of Wills in Lackawanna County, and had a lot of signs out there. He attacked the incumbent, who had some problems about whether her petition should have been accepted and whether she was spending too much time taking vacation 5 weeks a year down in Florida, that kind of thing. And his campaign went nowhere. She beat him by almost 2-1. The last numbers I saw was 20,000 to 11,000. And it might have just been people were, you know, sick of Pat O'Malley. He didn't have the qualifications for this job. She certainly did, and she worked at it. I've worked with her. She was not just the incumbent, but she was very competent, and she ran a very good office. So we had that. And then in Lackawanna County, we also had a judicial race a three-way race. But in the judicial races, they cross file. And you had Mary Walsh Dempsey, who had been who's been an experienced lawyer in many areas. She represented workers in workers' comp cases. She was an assistant DA, prosecutor, and then she worked for a business and pro-business law firm. She was on Scranton City Council as an appointee for a temporary seat. And her opponent, Paul Ware, who's a sitting magistrate with judicial experience there, put a lot of money into his race and a lot of social networking. And Mary Dempsey walked away with the Democratic primary fairly easily. The third party in the race was a Republican who kind of hid that she was a Republican till toward the end, and then came out and said she was a constitutional conservative, Neisha Arora. She won the Republican nomination, but not by anywhere near the numbers she's going to need in the fall. This is going to be Mary Dempsey's race to win, or to lose, actually. And she's not going to do anything different than what she is. All she needs is her name on the ballot, and she will be a winner on that.
We've got coming up redistricting.
Yes. And
of course, that depends on the official results of the census, which we won't have until December, January.
Yes. They won't be certified until then. And that's presenting a problem. I had a conversation this week. I happened to run into Matt Cartwright, and he just expressed what everybody, you know, is waiting to hear in the congressional delegation. We won't know the numbers till January, and at the beginning of February, you have to start your petitions, and nobody will know what their district is going to look like. Now, the commission has been put together, and the fifth vote on that commission was appointed by the Supreme Court, and it's the chancellor of the University of Pittsburgh. The last time when they did this, the Supreme Court changed the makeup of the court. They put more compact districts. They no longer look like those salamanders that gave the name to gerrymandering. They're compact districts. They make a lot of sense. And don't forget, they have to be one man, one vote, equal number of people in each district. So we're going to see.
We're going to get about 750,000 in a district.
Yeah, right. And there's going to be one fewer congressman, you know, because Pennsylvania is losing a congressman. They didn't have enough growth to maintain their 18 congressmen. So right now the delegation is 9-9. It used to be 13-5 Republican, but we'll just have to see. I'm sure Cartwright would like to get more of Monroe County in there with the exodus from New York and New Jersey, people moving in being more Democratic, and he'd probably not want to see like your county added to his. He already has Wayne and Pike counties, which have voted fairly heavily against him. They're Republican counties. So we'll just have to see what happens.
I've heard for months that Connor Lamb is interested in running for the Senate. I'm imagining that Connor Lamb thinks that his district may be eliminated and he'd like to stay in politics. And so he would run against John Fetterman.
Yeah, that could be one of the districts. One of the possibilities is that Connor Lamb's district gets absorbed largely by the district to the north from Erie, Mike Perry's district. And in that case, we'd see it would be split up. It wouldn't be all with Mike Perry. It would be... it would go out there because the West has lost population in Pennsylvania. It's the East that has gained population. So it's one of those scenarios. The problem for the Democrats is the Conor Lamb could hold, if that was a separate seat, he could hold it. Without Conor Lamb, it's not likely to be a Democratic seat.
Well, but if the district isn't there, he's not going to hold it. There's right. nothing to hold.
And, you know, the Democrats have a very thin majority in the House. Surprisingly, they shouldn't have had, but they do, and they keep losing people. Charlie Crist, who has a seat in Florida, is giving up his seat to run for governor. Val Demings, who has a pretty solid seat, the congresswoman from Florida, is going to run against Marco Rubio for the Senate.
Oh, has she announced?
Yeah, this week she said that she's going to do that. And I don't know if she's done the formal thing, but she said that she intends to do that. So they're losing that seat. They're losing the Tim Ryan seat in Ohio. He's going to be running for a higher office, for Rob Portman's seat, I believe. And they have to come up with candidates. The Republicans last time came up with better candidates, more women on the ballot.
Coming up with candidates seems to be a problem for Democrats. In my district, in my county, we had 8 positions opened on the ballot, not one Democratic candidate for any of those positions. Now, I grant you, these were not positions of president, senator, governor, but they were government positions. They were positions that affect people's lives. They were positions that help you build your organization if you organize campaigns for them. They didn't bother.
That's the thing. You organize.
Yeah.
And even though if you don't win, you tend to bring out Democrats. They in a county like yours, all they see are Republican things. Right. And they say, why should I come out? Or maybe I should be a Republican if they're on the fence. But if the Democrats have an opponent, they can get voters out. And every voter in a statewide election for governor or for senator or auditor general or things is important. You've got to get, you know, you're not going to win Susquehanna County as a Democrat. But if you can cut the winning margin from 3-1 to 2-1, that's an improvement.
By the way, that's how Biden won Pennsylvania. He cut the rural margin for the Republicans. He didn't win the rural electorate, but he won more votes in the rural areas than had previously been won by Democrats.
Right. And if you win if you lose 3-2, it's better than losing 2-1.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's the Howard Dean theory. And the Democrats have tended to get away from that.
In the meanwhile, I see that in your neighborhood, somebody's already got a Trump 2024 sign up.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They had the Trump sign up before the election, and now they put Trump 2024. You know, there's still places that I go by that have Trump signs. There's one place between Oliphant and Troop that I've been past, and the guy must have a half a dozen Trump signs in his yard. There's another one up in Scott Township. You know, they fly the Trump flag, and I counted 9 or 10 Trump signs in his yard. Of course, they don't all vote, but whatever.
But it makes an impression. It makes an impact.
Yeah, on that. The one guy in the Morgan Highway that has had a Trump sign up since 2016 still has his flag flying and a sign, a big...
And Trump. You have them all over the rural areas. In Susquehanna County, there's a lot of Trump signs that have not come down.
Well, you know, part of that is because of the big lie.
Well,
and
yes.
People think that Trump won, and we're seeing that played out in places like Arizona now, where they, you know, it's a Republican state. Republicans ran the election, and they certified the election, and they certified the recount. It was all for Biden, and the Republican legislature is saying, no, we won't accept that. And they're running their own bizarro recount audit, they call it, by a guy who has no qualifications to do the audit, looking for... China bamboo in paper ballots to indicate that they were imported from China.
Why would bamboo indicate that the ballot was imported from China? I got bamboo all over the county here.
Well, it's because they associate bamboo with China. So
well, I understand that, but why don't they look for rice? There's a lot of rice in China.
Rice paper doesn't hold up as well as bamboo paper.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay. Right. You know, but this is to maintain the fiction and the farce. And what they're going to do is they're going to take this and they're going to franchise it. They're going to move to Georgia, where the Georgia election people were Republicans, and they came out and they said, no, this was a fair and honest election.
And plus, they recounted it three times.
Yes, including hand counts. And the one Georgia official, the assistant there, said to Trump, stop it. People are going to get killed. And he was right. And so the Georgia legislature, the Republican legislature, took the power away from the locals. And they
said, makes sense.
And the people who are professionals, because they don't like the results. They're a party that I've talked about ad nauseum, saying that only they think that they should run the government. And anything else, no matter what the people say, is no. Remember, you know, all those ballot initiatives that the people have voted for, more liberal things, the Republicans keep trying to change back. They try to nullify the will of the people.
Well, they succeeded it because they have the control of the legislatures where they try it.
Yeah, like in Florida, where people said that former felons should be able to vote. They then passed a law that said getting out of prison isn't enough. You have to pay your fines in order to do it. You have to be able to prove that. Michigan, they've tried to do the same, make other rules. Wisconsin, make other rules that make it harder for people to accept the election results and things like that. It's kind of crazy. So anyway,
and we see also the results of this kind of political victory in the judicial system. This week we had the filing of a case that the Supreme Court agreed to see from Mississippi, the rule on, which is a very interesting case. In the first instance, it deals with the right to abortion.
Right.
Roe versus Wade. The foundation of it is, when a fetus is not viable, the mother has the right. In other words, when the fetus cannot live apart from the mother's body, the mother has the right to decide whether the fetus should continue to develop. Once the Supreme Court said, once the fetus can live outside the mother's body, the mother no longer has that right. That was the line that they drew. And that was challenged over the last 40 years, I don't know how many times, and reaffirmed every time. Every time.
Well, Jake, it's a more basic thing. When they decided Roe v. Wade, which was a Republican court, was the Berger Court, and it was Lewis Powell that wrote the decision. What they decided was that there was a fundamental right, a privacy right, for the woman to make these decisions. And the right-wing legal argument is no, it's not an enumerated right in the Constitution, therefore you have no right to make this kind of a decision. And that's the first instance. The second thing that they were saying is that the Roe v. Wade took away the right of the states to make their own decisions on these things, rather, like the states being the laboratory for different judicial or different kinds of positions. And if they nullify Roe v. Wade, what they're saying is it just goes back to the states. And then it goes back to the arguments that you've had, where the state legislature decides that even a fetus that's not viable has a superior right than the woman who's carrying it. And so they've gone to 15 weeks from 20. The reigning case right now is out of Pennsylvania. It's Planned Parenthood versus Casey. Bob Casey was the governor, and that's where they came to this viability type of argument. But Texas has taken this further. Texas now has Governor Abbott passed a bill that says at 6 weeks, once you can hear the heartbeat, even though at 6 weeks, that's about the only thing that's there. The fetus is only a couple of inches big and it's not formed and whatever, that stops the mother's rights and the fetus and abortion now can't be had. And they further, they said there's no exception for rape or incest in that. So they're going to be testing these cases.
Right.
And they
but that deals with the question of abortion. But I was pointing to another matter, and that is the matter of judicial procedure. This ruling by the Supreme Court, Roe versus Wade, the basis of it, was reaffirmed many, many times. Many times. Over a 40 or 50-year period, right?
Mm-hmm. Stare decisis.
This Mississippi case says precedent doesn't count. Throw it out. That's the basis for deciding this thing. Precedent doesn't count. And I'm confident, and of course that is Clarence Thomas's point of view, has been throughout the entire time that he's been on the court.
Yeah, well,
if precedent doesn't count, how do you have law?
Well, but precedent doesn't count except for things that he wants.
Picky.
But, you know, I mean, stare decisis, which says it basically is the precedent counts, is the general rule. But don't forget there have been times when we didn't want to have stare decisis. You don't want Dred Scott. You don't follow that anymore. The Plessy versus Ferguson was the classic case that was from the 1897, said a separate but equal is okay. Jim Crow is okay. And comes 1954, and the Supreme Court says, no, we're no longer going to give that stare decisis. We had the Korematsu cases back in World War II, where the Japanese challenged their incarceration. The Supreme Court allowed it. That case wasn't really overturned. The policy had long gone, but the case itself wasn't overturned until very recently. It was still there for 50 or 60 years. So there has to be a mechanism. The liberals want to overturn Citizens United.
Citizens United hasn't been around for 60 years.
I understand that, but it's still been around for a while. And you know, whether you adhere to it or not, that's the whole thing. And as I said, when you get a Clarence Thomas, it's catch as catch can.
But what you've got now is 200 Clarence Thomases appointed by Trump throughout the legal system, including three of them on the Supreme Court.
Which is another thing that the Republicans have and conservatives have taken that aspect far more seriously than the Democrats over the years. It's only after things got too late that the Democrats woke up. By the way, Biden has finally gotten his first set of judicial nominees approved, including an African-American woman to the D.C. Circuit. And they think that she's going to be the next nominee to the Supreme Court because he promised to put a black woman on the court. So he's working quicker on that, but he doesn't have all the openings.
What do you see coming up next week? We're almost done here.
Well, we have to follow the infrastructure.
Follow infrastructure, right.
In the courts there. And also, Biden's push to get more funding for the IRS to go after the wealthy who are able to dodge taxes. It's hundreds of billions of dollars. It could be in the trillions of dollars over 10 years that they could recapture just without raising taxes.
Well, I think this is something that's going to come up this coming week because the infrastructure bill and these tax measures, these appropriation measures, are up on deck now for this next week. So we've got something to look forward to and something to talk about next week. So I'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week, and congratulations to Jake on being a new grandfather, and congratulations to my daughter for her graduation from law school.
Congratulations to everybody.
She's only 30 or 40 years off away from the Supreme Court.
Well, we can always root for her.
Can root for her.
Right.
Or your new grandson.
So why not? Why not?
All right. See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.